I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Now a special Talk Radio 1210 WPHT presentation. It's Readin', Writin', and Reason. Now here's your host, Dom Giordano.
Hey, welcome in, everyone. Our weekly edition of Readin', Writin', and Reason with Dom Giordano, Dan at the controls. And boy, do we have a good one this week. If you missed the show, one of my favorite guests, top two or three into all talk radio years, Bill Donahue, the head of the Catholic League, brand new film about Disney and what's actually going on inside Disney, trying to challenge it and change it. And of course, you can watch this at the Catholic League website, catholicleague.org. Here's what Bill Donahue told me about this disenchanted kingdom, Disney, from the great Walt Disney to what it's become today. Here is Bill Donahue. Hey, Bill, good Friday. Welcome back.
How you doing? Thank you so much. And I love the way your star continues to rise.
Yeah.
It does.
Yeah, thank you. Bill, you are just the man of so many talents, and I just like your heart on these issues, trying to reach people and even save souls, if I might. And I'm looking at the featured interviews in this film, very, very impressive, with people like Ben Carson, Miranda Devine, Tony Perkins. We love this guy, Christian Toto, when we have him on. Bill, tell us, you're the executive producer. What does the film try to do?
It tries to explain to people what has happened to Disney. As I say in the movie, when I was in the seventh grade, a nun said to me, "Who's your favorite person in America?" And I answered, "Walt Disney, for the obvious reason. He makes people happy." I mean, everybody loved Disney. And there's still some good thing, some good fare that they put out. But it's clear that it's something that's happened over the last several decades. I started my fight with them back in 1995 when Bob Iger, at that time the head of ABC, was putting out some really anti-Catholic fare on TV, and then later with the movies. Miramax, the distributor, the Weinstein brothers, they were owned by Disney. But it's only been in more recent times when Disney, in terms of its animated characters, the thing that really makes them so big, started going in with the woke agenda. And let me just get right to the quick of it. It's about a year ago, the whole country knew about this situation in Florida where they wanted to teach little kids, kindergarten, first grade, second grade, third grade, ages 5 to 8, they want to question them about their sexuality. Are you happy being a boy? Are you happy being a girl? The idea was to put the seeds into the kid's head that maybe they could transition. Now, I regard this as child abuse, and I think more Americans need to call it that for what it is. These little kids just got off their tricycle. They're just learning the alphabet, and they want to sexually engineer them. And they don't want the parents to be involved. When Disney got involved, it should have been agnostic, not got involved at all. It's political. But if they were going to get involved, you would think they'd get on the side of the family. No, they took the side to undermine the family. At that point, back on April the 8th, I wrote a letter to Bob Chapek, at that time the CEO, and I asked him if he would sit down with Tony Perkins, whom I cleared this with Tony first, of course. Tony's the head of the Family Research Council, is in the movie, a distinguished evangelical. I represent a good swath of the Catholic community. He represents a good swath of the evangelical community. Would you sit down with us and listen to our concerns? And there was no boilerplate there at all, nothing incendiary. He just blew us off. And that's when I said to Tony, I said, look, their whole idea of inclusion always seems to exclude people like us who believe in traditional moral values. I just can't put out another news release or write something about this. I've got to do something more. And that's when we came up with the idea of doing a documentary. And it really does tell quite a story. It's 50 minutes long. It's free on our website. You can also get it through Amazon Prime. You can get it through Salem Now. But it really tells a story about how far they've come. And I hope that Disney will reconsider its woke ways.
And Bill, in there, because you're the type of guy that just doesn't put this out there, there's got to be a feeling that it's doable, that Disney will do that, or, you know, over a period of time, people will do without Disney until they do that. I think we've seen, particularly with DeSantis in Florida, that Disney is not too big to fail, that they can be brought in slowly but surely. At least that's how I read some of this. Do you see that in the imminent future, that Disney can be reined back into more traditional fare?
Well, what I've been telling a lot of people this week in the interviews is that, I've long believed this as a social scientist, there are no iron laws in history, all right? History can go, is jagged. It can go forward, it can go backward, it can do all kinds of things. History is made up of individuals. We're all contradictory, we all can change. The point is this, Disney made a decision to go left and get involved with this movement, this transgenderism movement, against the interest of the family, against parents. We've seen it from the surveys. The American people are not happy with the direction of Disney. I am hoping that with this documentary, it's a cultural marker, that it will be a bit of a wake-up call, at least to tap the brakes and to, before they go down this road any further, and say, wait a minute, is this really the direction that we want to go in? Why don't we just get back to our moorings and just put out wholesome family fare for kids? We're talking little kids here. We're not even talking adolescents.
Bill, so that listeners have a sense, though, my sense is, though, there in these places, a critical number of people, I see it as kind of like the FBI. They only have to be 50 to 75 influencers inside Disney that are propagating this stuff because of their own values. It can't be that they think it's a bigger seller doing this, is it?
No, I don't think so. And I think you're absolutely right. What I'm talking about, it's been talked about before. Tocqueville talked about it back in the 19th century. We're looking here at a tyranny of the minority. You've got this very loud vocal voice. And we're seeing more and more that gays, for example, are taking exception to being lumped in with the transgender movement. And many of them are speaking out against this. So this cuts across a lot of different demographic segments of our society. I mean, how many people really are in favor of sexually engineering kids? And I don't care whether it's straight or gay. You just leave the kids alone and let them be kids and let them grow up normally. There's time for these kinds of discussions at a later age. But the fact that they would attack kids in kindergarten tells me just how far gone they are.
Bill, to that point, one of the markers, and my producer Dan has seen the film, has a question. Bill, one of the markers to me is there are elements that believe that drag queen stuff has become mainstream enough, normalized with kids. The Milwaukee Bucks the other night had a pride night. Fine, that's a mainstream concept. But at halftime, they have a drag queen show.
Yeah, well, I've researched this, and I found out who is responsible for this and the name of the gal out of San Francisco. And if you read the work of Judith Butler, her name doesn't mean anything to most people. I understand that. She's a sociologist at my alma mater, NYU, where I got my doctorate in sociology. She's one of the leading intellectuals in this area. And if you read the work of the people who founded Michelle T, their goal is to confuse people. They come right out and say, this is not Bill Donahue, you say this. Their goal is to confuse people, now children, not just adults, about matters sexual. In other words, they take umbrage at the idea that there's such a thing as a man and a woman. They don't believe that. They believe that everything is fluid. There's no such thing as human nature. Everything is a social construct. In fact, there is such a thing as human nature. And there's nature's God, which upsets them even more for me to say that. Human nature is fixed. It doesn't change from one culture or civilization. It's timeless. And that's why you always see parents all over the history of the world always have to teach their kids to share, right? Because the most natural thing for a kid to do is to say, it's mine. They don't have to be taught that. There's all kinds of examples. There's hundreds of examples of human universals. They take exception to that. Drag Queen Story Hour is not some innocent little game, all right? They want to sit and put into people's minds that everything is fluid. There's no such thing that's set. And once you go down that road, then you are at the stage where we are today, where a group of medical panelists at Harvard Medical School here about a year and a half ago came out and said that men can get pregnant. Now, if you believe that, then I think they should put you in a straitjacket and take you to the nearest asylum.
All right, Dan, you got a question. You've seen a film for
First,
Bill.
I want to compliment Bill on just a fantastic film. It's very, very well done. I wouldn't expect anything less from Mr. Donahue. But, Bill, one of the most fascinating portions of the film that I really enjoyed was it's not only discussing what we're discussing here and the negative implications of such a move by Disney, but it's the why behind what's going on here. And you guys delve into the ESG score, and not only Disney, what the ESG score has done to kind of push the hand of corporations to go woke. So I was wondering if you could quickly but briefly explain what that ESG score is and how it is indeed making these corporations kind of go woke, the why behind what's going on here.
Well, you're right. You take a look at BlackRock, you take a look at Goldman Sachs, they're into this whole idea of equity. What they mean by equity is forced equality and a political agenda. They don't mean, the word equity means fairness. That's not what they're talking about here. And they have this very left-wing agenda, which has gone from the university to Wall Street. That's one of the most dramatic changes I've seen as a sociologist in the last 5 years. It used to be those ideas, I was a professor for many years, those crazy ideas stayed there in the academy, on the campus, but then now they seeped into the healthcare industry, into the corporate 500, into the top echelons of the military. And one of the reasons why we have Vivek Ramaswamy, who's a brilliant young guy, and 37 years of age, a Hindu fellow, went to Catholic high school. You see him on some of the TV shows. We brought him in to talk more authoritatively about this thing. The corporate elite, especially the financial segment of our society, has really been pushing this. And that's why Disney, of course, is bending that way. But again, the average person is not organized. I understand that. But, you know, and we can't win this war as cultural generals like myself unless I have troops, namely the rank and file. You put the two of us together, we can. And I'm hoping that this documentary, now it's getting a lot of distribution, will be a bit of a wake-up call. And these guys can, like I say, tap the brakes, rethink this thing. Is this really the right way to go down? And why don't they actually talk to a lot of people in the gay community and just instead of assuming that they know the way they think? That's not the case, and it's not just straights here. A lot of people are having some problems with this, particularly when you're dealing with little kids.
That is such a great point. That's what I was making the point today, Bill, about the drag queen thing with the Milwaukee Bucks. It's stereotypical, I believe, to throw that out there. Oh, this is the predominant thing. It sets people back. We've moved forward, acceptance, et cetera, on this. But not the area, the zone at the farthest, transsexual, little kids and all. People are going to revolt. Even, I'm hoping, liberals think this is infringing on parents' rights on top of everything else.
Well, there's this one psychologist, she was probably the first noted transgender psychologist, Erica Anderson, and she was honest enough to come out and say here about a year ago, she said, I'm responsible for promoting this idea of transgender. She says, and I've done the work on these kids, on adults, not, I shouldn't say kids. And she said, it's gone too far. I'm out. I don't want to go with this thing any further. This thing is like a runaway train, and you have, you know, the most likely of the kids to go through this transgender surgery and the like. It's teenage girls. It's not the boys becoming the girls. It's the girls wanting to become boys. So much for the great women's movement and the feminist movement. They were supposed to be proud to be women. Now they want to be boys, and now you have the boys competing against the girls. And where are the feminists complaining that they fought so hard for women's sports and Title IX and everything else? Meanwhile, you have the men competing against them, taking away their rights, and the feminists don't say a word. It's striking.
It's only the bravest, and even they have difficulty. Bill, this is a masterwork again. Tell people where we can get it.
Well, the easiest place to get is go right onto our website at catholicleague.org. It's right there on the front page. It's free. Set aside some time to watch it. It's 50 minutes long. It's very well done, and I hope it does create a cultural conversation. It already has.
Absolutely. Bill, thank you very much. Thanks for coming back, as always.
Thank you so much.
All right. That was Bill Donahue here on Reading, Writing, and Reason. Again, the film, it's streaming on Salem Now or CatholicWig.org. You can order a DVD on CatholicWig.org. Tremendous work. You will enjoy this. And let's hope that Disney gets the message that people have had it on this. Coming up, the people that are sending that message are parents. And here on Reading, Writing, and Reason, we're going to talk with the author of a great new book, The Great Parents Revolt, that's out just recently. Is 2023 the year that we see that? That's next on Reading, Writing, and Reason. Welcome into our weekly podcast, Reading, Writing, and Reason, with big guest nationally. You just heard Bill Donahue. Locally, a whole array of them that are pushing back against those that are trying to take away the rights of parents, among other things. Joining us next is Lance Izumi. Lance is with the Pacific Research Foundation. We've had them on over the years. They do great work. And the new book is The Great Parents Revolt. It's 2023 that year. Here's what Lance told me he's seeing nationwide. Lance, welcome to Philadelphia. Thank you for joining us.
Well, thanks very much, Dom, for having me on your show. It's a great pleasure to be with you.
Well, Lance, we'll go through some and highlight some of the people like Gabs Clark, this widowed, low-income African-American mother of five children living in a motel in Las Vegas. And I read a lot about her in the breakdown of your book and how inspired and inspirational she is. But tell me, do you see this in the broader sense of this great revolt, critical race theory, and all these other things? Give me some stuff. You've been intense with this, that parents are engaged in this battle and maybe winning some of it.
Yeah, I think they are, actually, Dom. I mean, certainly, you know, there's a long ways to go. You mentioned in your opening monologue about Randy Weingarten, the teachers, all the various special interests who are arrayed against parents. But I do think that if you look at these initial successes that parents have had as this great parent revolt has started over the last couple years, I think that, you know, they're gaining some really notable successes. So if you look at the bigger picture, I think that one of the things that you see is the takeover of school boards across the country by parents and their allies. And, you know, I think it's important to realize that it's not just in red states like Florida and places like that, but it's actually happening in blue states as well. In my own home state of California, which you can't get much more blue than us, you saw on Election Day, one of the bright spots over here was the fact that school boards, you know, up and down the state were taken over by parents. And that's had a real impact. And so, for example, one school board down in Southern California, which flipped to a pro-parent majority, the first thing they did at their first meeting of the majority was to pass a ban on critical race theory. So it's having a real impact in policy. So it's not just, you know, individual parents who are doing extraordinary things. Those things are happening, but it's really these parents who are banding together, gathering not only themselves, you know, to as a group, but also putting that to use as political power. And I think that you're starting to see this. And I think that as the years progress, that this thing is going to have a momentum. It's not going to be just a one-off, 1 or 2 year thing. I think parents have had the fire lit under them, and it's going to only grow. It's going to be really a widespread, you know, grassroots rebellion.
Well, let's talk about critical race theory, though. You feature people with this, and it's worked. But you know, the only flaw, and I've searched, I have questions. I don't have another form of calling it. Because it's not really critical race theory as we would, you know, technically see it in law school and all, Lance, you know, the full Marxist thing. Is there a better way to fine-tune that? You know, one of the things I asked, Mr. School Board Person, do you want kids coming out of school believing America is still a racist country? Things like that. Is it winning to call it critical race theory? Does that still work?
No, I think it does work just as a shorthand, though, Dom. You know, it's like it's very true that the left, you know, denies that there is such a thing as critical race thinking being practiced in the schools. But one of the things that we take pains to do in the book is to show that critical race theory, which is basically racial Marxism, where you separate oppressed and oppressor classes based upon race, that sort of thing is happening, but in the schools, but not necessarily under the name of critical race theory. It's often happening under the guise of things such as diversity, equity, and inclusion, racial justice, all kinds of other euphemistic names. Mm-hmm. But the effect, the impact, at the end of the day, is the same. It's to separate kids into different classes based upon their race, and then to, unfortunately, you know, make a lot of them, you know, feel very badly about who they were born as. And so I think that that is something that needs to be revealed. And I think we do that in The Great Parent Revolt, is to show not only these success stories of parents rising up against critical race theory or whatever you want to call it in the classroom, but also to all these different types of euphemisms and manifestations that critical race theory actually morphs into in the classroom.
And, you know, when you put Ms. Clark out there, a widowed, low-income African-American mother of five kids living in a motel in Las Vegas, it's not the same thing as some white guy who stands up and says something about this. So tell us about Ms. Clark.
Well, that's right. You know, I think that's one of the reasons why in our book, The Great Parent Revolt, we actually lead with Gabs Clark, because she is the person who you least expect to be a heroine when it comes to fighting critical race theory. As you say, she's low-income African-American, mom of five, living in a low-income motel in Las Vegas. But her son, who is mixed race, was forced to endure critical race theory influenced exercises in one of his classes in his school, where he had to identify himself based on race, put out all sorts of other identifications of his religion, his sexuality, his gender, all sorts of things that he thought was private, and he refused to do it. And so because of that, the school denied him a diploma because of that. And so Gabs Clark said that, look, this school is undercutting the future success of my child because they want to force him to do something that he, on principle, is against. And so she therefore decided, I need to sue the school. And she took the school to federal court based upon compelled speech violating the First Amendment, Equal Protection Clause violations of the 14th Amendment, and federal anti-discrimination laws. And so therefore, you know, you have these parents like Gabs Clark who don't necessarily fit the mold of an opponent of CRT, but whose lives are being impacted by the evil effect of CRT, and that it just underscores and shows that critical race theory is one of the most, if not the most, divisive doctrine being peddled in America's classrooms.
Lance, one of the groups that has shown, I was thinking about this and you and your work overall here, one of the groups that has shown involvement here by ousting the board in San Francisco, by we have friends in Loudoun and Fairfax that we bring on routinely, are Asian American parents and students. And in Fairfax County now, in the name of equity, you're right, it's not critical race theory, equity they think is bulletproof. They withheld, 13 high schools have been caught now withholding national merit scholarship announcements to students. Many of them, a disproportionate number, I believe, a very big number, were Asian Americans. So are you seeing that also, a group that some people say don't get politically involved, are now in schools?
Oh, absolutely right, Dom. I think, you know, being Asian American myself, I've seen it, you know, not just in Virginia, where you're seeing it right now with regard to the withholding of those National Merit Scholarship Awards information from the parents, many of whom are Asian Americans. But you also see it here in California, too, where Asian Americans rose up and actually fought efforts to bring back race-based racial preferences in state policy. And so, therefore, therefore, I think that the Asian Americans are really this silent sleeping giant, really. It's a political force. And I think that you're going to see Asian Americans not just rising up in places like Virginia, but I think it's going to be all across the country, because these sorts of policies which are based upon this equity issue, where equity means basically the same results for everybody, and so you can't really, you know, try and recognize high-achieving students, because that somehow hurts the feelings of all the rest of the kids in the school, that that goes against the culture, really, of Asian Americans, who really want their children to really strive for perfection and for high achievement. And therefore, you know, I think that you're going to have this huge clash between this, you know, critical race theory slash equity agenda and the interests of Asian Americans in seeing that their children have the best future possible.
Exactly. Well, look, it's a great title, too, The Great Parent Revolt. And you guys do a good job of outlining some people like Ms. Clark, who, you know, it really took a spark. But look at what the results are. Anything else, any other person that you'd like to profile, Lance, for us in the book?
Well, you know, I think there are a lot of great profiles in the book. I think that one of the things that people will be very interested in is actually we profile a student who actually tells us firsthand of the types of critical race theory influence exercises that he had to actually endure in public school. And, you know, including, for example, being made to engage in a so-called privilege walk, where the teacher would call out a privilege like you are white or you are Christian, you are male, and you'd have to take a step forward. He said it was like a criminal lineup. And so those are the sorts of things that children are having to endure all across the country, and it's why we wrote this book, so that parents can see that and rise up and do something about it.
Great book, great read, and of course we love the work of the Pacific Research Institute. Lance, The Great Parents Revolt, where's the best place to get it?
It's you can get them on Amazon.com or any of your favorite online booksellers. So, you know, it's doing quite well, actually. I think it's reached number 5 on Amazon's education policy bestseller list.
Very good. Lance, thank you. As always, thanks for coming on today.
Thanks so much, Dom. It's a real pleasure to be with you on your show.
All right, that's it this week for Reading, Writing, and Reason. Tell people about it. We bring you excellent guests with a lot of information and hope. And don't forget, you can stream this new look at Walt's Disenchanted Kingdom from the Catholic League. Probably the easiest thing to do is go to CatholicLig.org, CatholicLig.org. Thanks to Dan for producing this and for you listening. We'll have another episode next week here on Reading, Writing, and Reason.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.